We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Away we go, episode 796 of the Al Galdi podcast. It is Tuesday, April 2nd, 2024, the day on which the Commanders are beginning their 2024 offseason workout program. This also is the day after an April 1st and April Fool's Day on which the Commanders announced three unrestricted free agent signings, including that of a quarterback. And no, that was not an April Fool's Day joke. At least I don't think that it was. So the Commanders on Monday afternoon announced the signing of unrestricted free agent quarterback Jeff Driscoll, who would appear to be in competition to be the Commanders QB3. So Jake Fromm, you have been put on notice. Commanders General Manager Adam Peters on March 25th in his session with reporters in Orlando, Florida at the NFL's annual league meeting said that he wanted the team to have four quarterbacks for training camp, and that now should be the case with Marcus Mariota, Jake Fromm, Jeff Driscoll, and yes, whoever the team takes via the number two overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft. But this was Peters on March 25th.
I mean, we have two quarterbacks on the roster right now with Jake and with Marcus, so you want to go to camp with four. So we're going to add two one way or the other. So however that happens, that's what we're going to do.
And that is what they are doing. Hello and welcome to this Tuesday installment of the Al Galdi podcast. The 2024 season will be Jeff Driscoll's age 31 season. He was taken by the San Francisco 49ers in the sixth round of the 2016 NFL draft out of Louisiana Tech, but he was released by the Niners in their cut down to 53 for the 2016 season. He has spent time with a number of other NFL teams, including playing in at least one regular season game in each of the last six regular seasons, 2018 through 2023. He, over those six regular seasons, played in at least one game for five different teams. The Cincinnati Bengals, the Detroit Lions, the Denver Broncos, the Houston Texans, and the Cleveland Browns, for whom he started a game in the 2023 regular season. And if you're wondering about a connection for Driscoll to the Commanders, there are a few, but here's one. He played for the University of Florida for the 2011 through 2014 seasons. Commanders head coach Dan Quinn was Florida's defensive coordinator and defensive line coach for the 2011 and 2012 seasons. Also, the Commanders on Monday morning officially announced the signing of unrestricted free agent receiver Olamide Zaccheaus. It was last Thursday afternoon that we had reports of the team having agreed on a contract with Zaccheaus. And the Commanders on Monday morning announced the signing of unrestricted free agent running back Jeremy McNichols. So the 2024 season will be McNichols' age 29 season. He is a journeyman running back. It was taken by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the fifth round of the 2017 draft out of Boise State. McNichols in his NFL career has been with a lot of NFL teams, including having played in regular season games for four different teams. Among those teams, the 49ers, with whom he has had multiple stints, including playing for the Niners in the 2017 and 2023 regular seasons. And of course, Adam Peters was an executive for the Niners for years, January 2017 to January 2024. So there's the connection. The McNichol signing, like the Jeff Driskel signing, clearly is a depth signing, but Jeremy McNichols has had a great nickname. His versatility as a ball carrier and a pass catcher earned him the nickname McWeapon while at Boise State. I like that nickname, McWeapon. Well, our next segment have a very good McGuest, NFL draft analyst Ian Valentino of the 33rd team. We're going to hone in on multiple things regarding the Commanders in the 2024 draft, including the great debate, North Carolina quarterback Drake May versus LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels versus Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy. Ian is going to examine the biggest positives and biggest negatives with May and Daniels. Ian is going to give us his truth about McCarthy. And spoiler alert, it is a truth that McCarthy lovers are not going to love. And Ian is going to tell us about how the Commanders should approach their many second and third round picks in the 2024 draft, in which the team has six of the top 100 picks, including two second round picks and three third round picks. Ian will list multiple potential targets for the Commanders with those second and third round picks, and will answer whether the team with those five combined second and third round picks should look to trade back into the first round. You know, with so much focus on the quarterback decision, what the Commanders should do with their five combined second and third round picks has been lost in the shuffle a bit. NFL draft analyst Ian Valentino of the 33rd team, next segment. Also on the show, I'll talk Nationals and Orioles. The Nats lost to the Pittsburgh Pirates 8-4 at Nationals Park on Monday in the Nats regular season home opener, but the O's, they walked off the Kansas City Royals 6-4 at Oriole Park at Camden Yards on Monday evening. Now, this was off blowing a 4-3 ninth inning lead, but Jordan Westberg, a.k.a. Westy, he is the Orioles starting second baseman and number eight batter, went 1-for-4 with a walk-off, one out, two-run, opposite field home run to right field on an 0-2 pitch for the 6-4 win. Before we get to some feedback, awful news about Vontae Davis. Former NFL corner Vontae Davis on Monday was found dead at a residence in South Florida. He was just 35. Police were investigating what happened, but said that preliminary work had suggested that foul play was not involved. Vontae Davis, the younger brother of former Redskins tight end Vernon Davis. Vernon and Vontae went to Dunbar High School in Washington, D.C. Vernon then went to the University of Maryland. Vontae went to the University of Illinois, in large part due to current Terrapins head coach Mike Loxley coaching at Illinois. But rest in peace, Vontae Davis. Also, Maryland basketball news, Jamie Kaiser Jr. has entered the NCAA transfer portal. Kaiser, for this season, a true freshman, had a disappointing season considering that he was a four-star recruit out of IMG Academy in Florida. Now, the Terps in this transfer season have landed two big transfer acquisitions in Belmont guard Jacoby Gillespie and Virginia Tech guard Rodney Rice, who was a four-star recruit at DeMatha Catholic High School in Hyattsville, Maryland. So the transfer portal giveth, and the transfer portal taketh away. You can hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Email from Brian Young on the Commanders quarterback decision with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft. Writes Brian, something that occurred to me is that Adam Peters apparently likes a well-mannered, disciplined game manager of a quarterback a la Brock Purdy, while Cliff Kingsbury seems to be more on the opposite style of quarterback. Think about who he has been with, runners, escapers, etc. I'm thinking that there may be a conflict of interest when it comes down to who the team selects at quarterback, being that the pick is Adam's call. Do you foresee any issues here? Thank you for the email, Brian. I would say a few things. Yes, Commanders general manager Adam Peters was the Niners' assistant general manager when they took Brock Purdy with the very last pick in the 2022 draft. And Peters did like a lot about Purdy. But Peters and the Niners still waited until the very last pick in the 2022 draft to take Purdy. So I would not take that selection as reason to believe that Peters necessarily prefers the Brock Purdy style of quarterback over another style of quarterback. I think that Peters and the Niners like Purdy, saw value and upside in Purdy, and thus took Purdy. But if Peters and the Niners really wanted Purdy, Peters and the Niners would not have waited until the very last pick in the 2022 draft to take Purdy. Commanders offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury, yes, his coaching history is that he has worked with a lot of mobile quarterbacks. But, you know, just about anyone who has worked with quarterbacks in college football a bunch over the last 15 years is going to have extensive history with mobile quarterbacks, because that's now what college football is, filled with mobile quarterbacks. So many of the good quarterbacks in college football every season now are mobile. This is the case for a variety of reasons, including college offenses now overwhelmingly embracing read option principles. Additionally, all of the perceived top quarterbacks in the 2024 draft are mobile. Jaden Daniels clearly is the most mobile, but others are mobile too. So I would not be too worried about a disconnect between Adam Peters and Cliff Kingsbury. Email from Stanley Evans on what the Commanders do with their number two overall pick in the 2024 draft, right, Stanley? We can't afford to miss this time at number two. It is time for Lady Luck to be on our side, whether it's Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, or even J.J. McCarthy. It is our time to strike. Regarding the NFC East, it is a perfect time to get on top of the division. It seems as if Dallas may not extend Dak Prescott's contract. Brian Daboll seems to be on thin ice, and Jalen Hurts still has a lot to prove this year after falling on his face last year. We're in prime position to take over the division in the next couple of years if we select the right guy. Imagine after all the drama and disappointment if in 1 year under this new regime, we struck gold and grabbed the next best quarterback. Fingers crossed. Thank you for the email, Stanley. Yes, my friend, fingers are crossed. You know, it's funny with the NFC East, the safest head coach in the division by far is the Commanders' Dan Quinn, right? Each of the other three head coaches in the division, it would seem to be on a hot seat. The Dallas Cowboys' Mike McCarthy, the Philadelphia Eagles' Nick Sirianni, and the New York Giants' Brian Daboll. Now, not each seat is equally as hot as the other two seats, but each head coach would seem to be on a hot seat to at least some degree. I mean, would you be surprised if any of those three guys got fired by the end of the 2024 season? Because I would not be surprised. And yes, it is time that Washington connected at a number two overall pick. The 2024 draft marks a third time in 13 years that Washington has the number two overall pick in an NFL draft. The first two times, what was done with the number two overall pick has not worked out. Quarterback Robert Griffin III in 2012, edge defender Chase Young in 2020. Our team cannot go 0-3 on three number two overall picks in a 13-year span. That is unacceptable. That is borderline incomprehensible. Gotta hit with whatever is done with this number two overall pick in the 2024 draft. And if you want a big event that you're planning to be a hit, get with Catering by Uptown. Catering by Uptown is the best catering service in the DMV. Visit cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. If you are planning a wedding, a party, a corporate event, whatever, you want great service, but you also want a great price. Well, Catering by Uptown provides both. Catering by Uptown is a family business. It specializes in handling everything so that you don't have to. Catering by Uptown understands that special events deserve to be celebrated in style. Catering by Uptown takes care of every detail so that you can enjoy your event. From putting together and executing a menu, to picking linens, to selecting an excellent florist, Catering by Uptown is committed to meeting your needs and exceeding your expectations. Great service, amazing cuisine, and reliability are the foundation of what makes Catering by Uptown one of the most referred caterers throughout Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Northern Virginia. Visit cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you. That's cateringbyuptown.com and make sure that you mention that Al Galdi sent you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Hey, thank you to all of you who have given this podcast a 5-star rating and who have written nice reviews of the podcast. You on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify can rate the podcast. 5-star ratings are very much appreciated, and you on Apple Podcasts can write a review saying that you like the podcast. The review does not have to be long, can be just a sentence or two, but the ratings and the reviews help us out a lot. So thank you very much for doing them. Well, perhaps nothing captures the trickiness of the Commanders quarterback decision with their number 2 overall pick in the 2024 NFL Draft than the recent content of our guest, NFL Draft analyst Ian Valentino of the 33rd Team, which is a really good NFL site that employs a number of former NFL executives and head coaches, including former Redskins head coach Jay Gruden. But Ian, last Friday, March 29th, put out a 7-round mock draft for the Commanders, and he on Monday put out a mock first round of the 2024 draft. And very interestingly, Ian in the 7-round mock draft for the Commanders had them taking North Carolina quarterback Drake May with the number 2 overall pick. But Ian in the mock first round of the 2024 draft had the Commanders taking LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels with the number 2 overall pick. If that does not capture the divide regarding whether the Commanders should slash will take May or Daniels, I don't know what does, to say nothing of how Michigan quarterback J.J. McCarthy fits into all of this. You can follow Ian Valentino on X at NFL Draft Study. Hey, Ian, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Al. It's been a little while since we chatted, I think probably since last draft cycle. So doing really well and excited to chat with you. And it's pretty exciting to talk about Washington right now with so many picks in their arsenal and really a roster, I think, that's ready for that injection of youth. And this is a great class to have that. So I love talking about teams in these situations. I think Washington and Arizona to me are super exciting as just like a bystander watching, because this is where franchises, you know, kind of define themselves, right? Like if you talk about like the next 10 years, this could be the draft that redefines everything.
Very much so, and that's a big part of the excitement for this Commanders draft, especially with Adam Peters now as the team's general manager. You have USC quarterback Caleb Williams as your QB1 for the 2024 draft. Who is your QB2, Drake May or Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, great question, especially because I did put QBs to Washington both ways. I have May as QB2. With the caveat that I think it really just depends on what you want to commit to doing. And for me, May is built and he plays a little bit more like Patrick Mahomes did last year. Like, I'm not saying he's Patrick Mahomes at all. It just, I think visually everyone kind of saw Patrick Mahomes transition away from those big plays into almost like that Tom Brady mode where he was just nickel and diming teams down the field, avoiding mistakes, playing really smart. And it's not saying that Daniels doesn't play smart. Obviously the numbers speak for themselves. The guy's very smart and his work ethic showed over 5 years from where he went to where he finished in college, but he's more of a chunk player. So he's more of an explosive player, which is not a bad thing. I just think you have to commit to one style. And for me, it's easier for me to avoid the risk. And I'm going to go with a little bit safer of a guy, a little bit more of a prototypical guy in Drake May.
That's interesting because an opinion that's out there and in fact has been expressed by the aforementioned Jay Gruden is that Drake May is more of a project while Jaden Daniels allows for more instant success. Do you buy that?
I do think that some of May's projection has been overstated a little bit. Now, he had some moments last year, sure. Like, yeah, he's throwing to a defender. Maybe he didn't see the guy drop. Everyone has those plays in college. Like, Caleb Williams had him, Andrew Luck had him, if we go all the way back. Like, all of these guys have those moments. But May wasn't consistently making those mistakes. In fact, I think he was making a lot of pre-snap reads that were correct, and they were more complex because they're more to the muddied part of the field. I think Daniels is smart, and I do think he can play pretty quickly and not have to sit and has a pretty considerably high floor considering. I do think he'll be, you know, probably in like that Kyler Murray range, right? Like, I think that's a really good comparison for him. I don't think Murray was ever going to be a bust. I don't think Daniels is going to be a bust unless if he just goes to a situation that implodes around him, right? Like, I think he's smart. Like I said, he's a hard worker, and that's like half the battle. Like, when it comes to, we know he has the physical traits. That stuff's not going to matter. He has the traits to do whatever he wants. It's just, does he have the work ethic and the ability to learn quickly? I think he's shown that he probably does. He's a little bit older than May. But for me, I look at May and I say, well, he's not that experienced. He's a year and a half younger. He only has 2 years experience. He had one NFL caliber receiver last year who only played in 8 games, and Devontae Walker. He lost a whole bunch of guys after his freshman season. It's not a surprise that he wasn't maybe an A plus in 2023. He was still pretty good too. So I do think that they both are guys that can walk in, start year one. Rookies are going to have their lumps. It's fine. It's more about game 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 than it is about that first month. I'd be pretty comfortable with both guys being under center. And you just know going in to say, yeah, okay, it's going to be a little bit rough at times. But I actually think both of them will be playing pretty well by the end of their rookie year.
There is such a variance in the assessments of Drake May and Jaden Daniels. There are people who love May and do not like Daniels. There are people who love Daniels and do not like May. Why do you think that there is this wide range of analysis?
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating to think of it from like a grading perspective and the way that they would look at things that way. I think that there's you look at what Daniels did and he did convert so many of these big plays, and those are, you know, especially on their scale, right? Like, it's like a 2-point play, right? So like when you connect on this big play, it's more valuable than maybe the nickel and diming here and there. But then you look at May, and I think consistently it would build, right? Like, good decision over good decision over good decision. It just, if you have 100 plays where you're rated as a 1, and then maybe 25 plays as you're rated as a 2, where that's maybe where Daniels is, and then the rest are maybe just average or lesser, then you probably enter this little zone where you could either nickel and dime your way to the top, or you're relying on those big plays. So I think it is pretty familiar with actually like these guys' play style. I think you could justify it either way. And I think if you look at their grading, I'm guessing if you looked at it from a game by game, play by play standpoint, which we don't get access to all of that stuff, but from a play by play standpoint, I'm wondering if it would be pretty close to that. If it was actually the opposite, it would actually be pretty fun because that would tell a different story than what our eyes is saying. And I actually think that's kind of like a fun challenge to what we think and our biases when we watch these guys. I do think that Daniels so consistently avoided negative plays that has to go in his favor to be able to provide those explosive plays. And you almost look at like CJ Stroud in a way. I don't think that they compare really, but like Stroud kind of did the same thing coming out of Ohio State. He never produced negative plays. He just created good plays. The question is, was he going to create those huge plays on the next level? Daniels does that. So again, they're not super comparable, but it's kind of fun to look back at these guys and compare their play styles and then kind of question, you know, do I need to take a step back and remove my biases you know, maybe off like the first film watch and say, am I just overlooking the easy stuff? And same thing with May. Am I overlooking? I think people do overlook the easy stuff with him.
Why do you think that it is that the betting market has Jaden Daniels and not Drake May as the favorite to be selected by the Commanders with their number two overall pick?
Yeah, so this is partially why I put May in my 7-round mock for Washington, because I actually think the betting markets might not be correct here. So the betting markets are reading what the public thinks. And Daniels has, it's interesting because Daniels was very publicly having big games in the fall. And I don't know if it's just people catching up on the college football season. We know a lot of NFL analysts don't have time to do both, right? Like watching college football and then NFL Saturday, Sunday is extremely difficult, especially if you have a family. And when you're writing about it and you're analyzing this stuff, it's almost impossible to do. So I think that this happens every offseason where everyone's kind of catching up. Or maybe we have access more to more games. It's a little bit hard to watch some of these games on Saturdays if you don't have like the entire TV package and somehow figure out how to watch Pac-12 games, RIP Pac-12. But barring that, right? Like, unless if you're just a, you know, like a freak, like one of us where we're just watching everything every weekend, you're catching up. And I think Daniels, when you're catching up on him, you just see so many big plays. Like you're watching Malik Nabers, you're watching Brian Thomas Jr. So you're seeing Daniels do this several times over. And then you go to Drake May's film and it's like, it's good, but it's more probably nuanced and it's less big play heavy. You're seeing one downfield throw that makes it as opposed to four. And so I think it's very easy to look at Daniels and say, this is one of the coolest players I've ever watched, which is true. That last year was incredible. But when you watch May, there's a lot more there. And it's almost like that Josh Allen out of Wyoming, where it's like sometimes you have to kind of squint. And then it's like, yeah, it's not always pretty, but like what he's doing really does work.
I want to get your takes on the biggest perceived negatives with Drake May and Jaden Daniels. So with May, two negatives that come up a lot are the easy misses and the bad footwork. What do you make of those criticisms?
Yeah, I'd probably agree. I don't think it's consistent enough for it to be something that I think will define his career. I do think that he doesn't have the arm that you would expect for someone that's 6'4", 240 pounds almost, right? Like when you hear that, you're thinking Mahomes, you're thinking Josh Allen, just a rocket. He doesn't have a rocket. He's throwing the ball. When he throws it across the field, it can hang there a little bit. And that's okay because he sees it early and he's still pretty young. So maybe that'll improve over time too. But he's not got a cannon. He has a good arm, not a great arm. And I think that that manipulates itself into the footwork aspect. And I think it manipulates itself into the accuracy issue. If you are slightly late, we see this with Tua Tagovailoa and some of these other more middle tier arms in the NFL. If you're slightly late, it's a turnover. Right. In the NFL, if that ball hangs there, it's not going to be there for long. The defender's going to go get it. And so, or if it's even on like the back shoulder versus the front shoulder, I do think May is more accurate and precise than probably given credit for. But there are definitely examples where he either overestimated his arm and he maybe let the ball loose a little bit late. And if that happens, that's going to be a turnover. Even in college, we saw it a couple times. He did throw some bad picks because of that. But I think that's learning his body. I think some of that's learning his own limitations and the speed of the game. So I think it's a valid one. I think it's one that's a little bit more correctable. I'd much rather work with someone that needs tighter footwork, maybe better balance transfer, maybe even to hit the weight room. Maybe to say he needs to have a stronger core, a stronger lower body so he can plant and really drive that ball. Baker Mayfield's done a really good job overcoming having a good, but maybe not like superstar's arm, especially when he's on the move. That ball doesn't really go that far. Like he can throw it far, but he's not throwing it super hard. I think he's a good comparison for May's arm. He has plenty of arm to be a good NFL quarterback, but Baker's at his best when he keeps everything tight and he moves within timing. I think May's going to be the same way.
And then the perceived biggest negatives with Jaden Daniels, there is the injury worry with him being thin combined with his reckless running style. There is the pressure to sack rate item, his career collegiate pressure to sack rate for Pro Football Focus sky high, although he did improve in that stat for the 2023 season. And then there is the idea that his great 2023 season, which was by far his best collegiate season, was aided big time by LSU having two great receivers in Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. How valid are those criticisms of Daniels?
Yeah, I actually think it's probably pretty fair. I think all of those are very very fair takes based off of what you see when you look at his body, when you look at that situation at LSU. Now, he responded as well as he could, and you do what you can, right? Like, Joe Burrow was not any worse coming into the NFL, and he was blessed with two of the best receivers we'll see in college. And they had more than that even. Same thing with CJ Stroud, right? Like, he was throwing to, you know, top five, top 10 type picks, and he turned out just fine. So there's examples on both sides, especially with like the playmaking around, but it is something. It's something to just make note of, to be able to say, hey, if he goes to maybe New England, maybe it's a totally different case because they don't have playmakers. Washington's different. Washington has those playmakers. I think the receiving core there is pretty strong, especially for a rookie to go to. It's abnormally strong from what we usually see. So I think that's a little bit mitigated based off the situation. But I do think that the other aspects of his game he has to work on. He can't take as many direct hits. He's 210 pounds, probably after crushing, you know, 30 peanut butter sandwiches every day since the season ended. Like, he looked like he was 190 pounds out there. And part of it is he's so tall. His playing weight's probably a lot less. So he has to protect himself. Number one, first and foremost, we've seen it in the NFL over the last 2 years. Almost every quarterback's gotten hurt. It doesn't matter if you're 240 pounds, doesn't matter if you're 200 pounds. So he's got to protect himself. I think he will. And again, he's a smart guy. I think he'll pretty quickly hear it from his coaches, right? Like, they're going to get in his ear about that. Just slide, just take the easy play. I think he'll adjust to that just fine. Some of that was him overcoming an LSU defense too that was so bad that he probably felt like he had to make something happen constantly. The NFL's not usually like that. It's usually a one score game by the end of the game. So there's not quite as much pressure to put up 50 points every week. So I think that is probably a mindset switch. So I'm a little bit concerned about it. I am concerned about his durability. I do think that there's an aspect with him, like the pressure to sack rate, that is definitely interesting, especially because we see how Justin Fields has struggled. And that's the same way that Justin Fields struggled, and also throwing over the middle of the field. Is he averse to it? Is he not confident in that? Or is it just the scheme? Because if it's just the scheme, then it's not going to be an issue. But not having reps throwing over the middle of the field is a concern to me. It's the same story as Justin Fields. And I'm still high on Justin Fields. I think he could be a good NFL starter. It just takes time, right? And if he didn't go to a situation that was catering to his skill set, whereas Daniels, he has the chance to have a fresh start. And maybe that's the difference between being, you know, a second quarterback, second contract type of quarterback, or you're on your second team.
Much more with Ian Valentino in moments, but if you enjoy this podcast, check out BGO Blind Pig, the official podcast of BGObsession.com. BGO Blind Pig is a roundtable discussion of all things Washington Commanders football. Lots of good and passionate Commanders conversation from Commanders fans who know the team well. You can find the BGO Blind Pig podcast on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, or on any major podcast provider. Make BGObsession.com the home for your burgundy and gold obsession, and make the BGO Blind Pig podcast one of your weekly DC football listens. We're talking with NFL draft analyst Ian Valentino of the 33rd team. You and your 2024 draft mock first round that came out on Monday have the Minnesota Vikings trading up to take J.J. McCarthy with the number 3 overall pick. Where are you on McCarthy?
Yeah, I think I'm probably more in line with most online analysts, where I think we look at the McCarthy rise and I'm not sure about it. I don't think this is someone that you could easily walk into the room and have confidently said, I'm going to put my entire franchise on this guy's back. And it's not his fault. He's got a strong arm. He's got a better arm than Drake May. He probably has as good of an arm as Jaden Daniels. He's very athletic. He's probably slightly more mobile than Drake May. He's not going to run like, you know, Jaden Daniels did, but he's a pretty good running threat too. So he can get out of the pocket. I like his experience under center. That gives you experience resetting your eyes after you do play action. It gives you experience with dropbacks and the footwork that it takes. Those things can take a rookie time. It could be a year, could be 2 years to adjust in the NFL. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it takes a summer camp. So every guy learns differently. You don't have to worry about those things with McCarthy. But then what you worry about is when he actually goes to throw the ball. So he's not experienced necessarily reading 4 or 5 receivers on the field when it's 2 minute drive. Jaden Daniels has seen that his whole career. He's been doing 2 minute drives his whole career. So there's strengths and weaknesses in situational play that McCarthy has and hasn't had that could be beneficial or set him back. I think the big issue for me with him is, besides the passing volume, which he obviously just didn't have at Michigan, is the accuracy. He throws fastballs and that's all he throws. Now he has some great heaters. He's got some Randy Johnson moments where he's throwing that ball and he's splitting the atom, and I love it. But then there's also moments where he's throwing to the flat to a guy 7 yards downfield across his body, and the ball ends up 5 yards to the left, and the catch and the coach is catching it on the sideline. It's just nowhere near the target. So it's not a, I don't think he has a bad arm in terms of strength or anything like that. He's got plenty of arm to do anything that he wants. To me, the question is, and to me, it doesn't look like a footwork issue. To me, it looks like almost like a Mitch Trubisky type issue where guys don't necessarily have natural accuracy all the time. I think he's one of those guys where you're just going to have frustrating misses and you live with that. So the question is, can he create enough chunk plays to overcome that? Well, we didn't see him do that. It's not like Jaden Daniels where it's like we saw him do that. So I think there's enough concern there for me to be able to say I can justify the pick. I don't think he's as bad as like – he's definitely not EJ Manuel. He's definitely not Christian Ponder. But like, is he somewhere? I wouldn't say he was like Zach Wilson either, because that situation was so unique. But is he somewhere that's maybe limited to like an average starter? Because he's just going to have these, like maybe like a Ryan Tannehill. And I know like that's a very common comp when people talk about average, quarterbacks, but he really had very similar struggles. He could not take heat off the ball for like the first 5 years of his career. He was just throwing darts, and it just created these moments where he couldn't get over the hump, and eventually he just wasn't the guy. So I think McCarthy's a pretty big risk. I understand taking him maybe in, I understand taking him in the top 10 if the first three guys are already off the board. I can understand why you would take him fourth. To be honest, I probably wouldn't. I think I'd probably have him as the fifth or sixth quarterback in this class. I can justify it. And if we sit here 4 years from now and he's a star, maybe I can look back and say I should have just trusted the traits more. But the exposure, I mean, just look at what Michael Penix did. The guy threw 700, 800 passes over the last 2 years, almost, something like that, probably even more. Same for Bo Nix. Bo Nix is, reinvented his game and did all these great things. So it's like, you look at McCarthy, it's like he was okay as a game manager. He was a good game manager, good on third downs. But what else did he do? Winning isn't the answer. You can't just say he won. It's like he didn't have the opportunity. He did what he could with that opportunity. It's a super small sample size. I don't love what he produced in that sample size. I do like the traits a lot, but it's a projection. And I think there's more projection with him than probably than what we've seen probably since Trey Lance. I think Trey Lance is probably, he was a massive, massive projection. But like you go back to Wilson and Trey Lance, most guys are more accomplished because they have to be. They're in a situation where like they've got to throw the ball 30 plus times a game for their team to have a chance. McCarthy, look at the Penn State game. Threw the ball like 10 times. And now that's an ode to Michigan being awesome and Jim Harbaugh being a psycho, like just wanting to prove to Penn State that we're more physical than you. And I love it. But like from an evaluation standpoint, it's like you can't do anything with that.
Wow, a very sobering take on J.J. McCarthy, but that's good. Hey, we as Commanders fans need to hear the truth about these quarterbacks. Looking at your 7-round mock draft for the Commanders, if ever there was a year to go through the exercise of a 7-round mock for Washington, this is that year. The Commanders in the 2024 draft have 9 picks, including 6 of the top 100 picks. Those 6 picks are the numbers 2, 36, 40, 67, 78, and 100 overall picks. So 1 first round pick, 2 second round picks, and 3 third round picks. You and your 7-round mock draft for the Commanders have them taking Drake May at 2, Texas receiver Adonai Mitchell at 36, Penn State edge defender Chop Robinson at 40, and Notre Dame offensive tackle Blake Fisher at 67. What do you like about Mitchell, Robinson, and Fisher?
Yeah, for sure. So for me, Mitchell, I think he's a guy that if he would have had a bigger workload, I think you're talking about him right with Roma Dunze, probably below Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers, because he's not quite there as an athlete or as an explosive talent, but he didn't really have the workload there. So great route runner, elite footwork, someone that's 6'2", 205, does not move like this guy moves. He was absolutely unguardable in the goal line situations. He would run a slant route. He'd put a release on a guy, create the most separation that's pretty much possible. So a 4-3 guy at his size, the route running's there. You look at so many examples, just Quinn Ewers at Texas had a bunch of receivers to target, and you just can't feed one of them all the time. Xavier Worthy might be a first rounder. Jatavion Sanders probably be a second rounder. They had Jonathan Brooks, who might be a second round. Like that team was just loaded. Even at Georgia, like AD Mitchell, his as a true freshman, was number two on the team in targets. So he's clearly talented. He definitely earned his keep, but he wasn't in a situation where he'd get 100 plus targets and be a consistent threat in the offense. I think he falls just because of that reason. Has all the traits to be a number one, number two receiver in the NFL. So you get a nice bargain there. I think that's a pretty good value considering the risk. Chop Robinson, you know, the Penn State guys, I'm always a little wary of. You know, is he Micah Parsons? Probably not, right? Like, no one's going to be Micah Parsons. But is he going to be a guy who produces more sacks in the NFL than he did in college? Penn State guys, they test amazingly. Even on film, Chop is super fast off the ball. Like, you can't miss him. He's always the first guy off the ball. He's not jumping the snaps. He's just that fast. Amazing combine performance, which you expect out of Penn State guys. They're workout warriors. You get him in the second round here because he doesn't have the production, and you worry a little bit about his run defense. But in the second round, you're not going to do better than someone with these marks and someone that can pressure the quarterback the way that he does. You just have to get him to finish better. If you do, he might be a Pro Bowl guy, might be a 10 sack a year guy. At worst, he's probably a high end rotational guy to like solid starter. I think that's pretty good in this class. There's only about four edge rushers really worth taking in this class, in my opinion. Everyone else is just a huge project. So I think Robinson at 40, I'd be kind of surprised if he's still there. I was going to take him at 36, but then I was like, well, you know, I was weighing things out, and then I was pretty happy to get both guys, even though there's only a couple pick difference there. So I think he's a really nice value. Fisher, you know, again, I was looking at this and saying, for Washington's need, do I feel like a tackle is more important than these other positions? The tackle class is so deep, I do think they can get away with waiting. And I was really, really happy to see Fisher there, because Fisher, you get stuck watching Joe Alt at Notre Dame, but Fisher on the other side is just as physically impressive. He's not ready to step in right now and be a lockdown bookend tackle because he's a little bit younger and he doesn't quite have the experience, and he doesn't quite have the, the toolbox of defense moves that you need against pass rushers. Like, Joe Walt can pretty much combat his guy any way that he needs to. His hands are great. He has the strength. Fisher has like the tools to get there. He just doesn't know how to use them and doesn't necessarily anticipate what a defender's going to do as well. I think that comes with experience and some higher level coaching. Still a younger guy, but everything's there to be really good. Powerful guy in the run game, really smooth pass blocker. So I think you could plug him in at right tackle in particular, right away. You just throw some more chips his way. You use a tight end. Like, there's ways to do that. Like, it's not the end of the world to start a rookie right tackle who doesn't quote unquote seem ready. And then those guys end up getting to the NFL and they're more functional than what you see, what you think. And he could be a guy that could be a starter for, you know, the next probably 6 to 8 years.
The Commanders, in having 2 second round picks and 3 third round picks, have the ammo to trade back into the first round. Would you recommend the Commanders trading back into the first round, especially considering that they would get a 5th year option with a first round pick? Or, given the crapshoot nature of the NFL draft, is the more prudent course of action for the Commanders to just make a bunch of picks with those combined 5 picks over the second and third rounds?
Yeah, it's a great question. And this is really team dependent for me. For me, Washington should take these picks. Just use these picks. You've got all this ammo. Keep taking stabs in this draft class. I don't think that the class is going to be particularly enticing enough to move up into the back into the first round. Like, I'm not sure who that you'd want to target. And maybe I'm just blank. Maybe, and you know, who knows, someone falls, right? Like, maybe Amarius Mims. If someone like that falls and you can give up the 100th overall pick to jump up from 36 or 40 to maybe like 20, I don't know, 25, we'll just say, is that worth it? That might be worth it. Because even though this is a really good tackle class, you're talking about someone that might have all pro potential one day. You're a little worried a little bit because of the injuries there. But so it has to be the right risk. It's very, very few. It's a short list of players that I would consider that for, especially for this Washington roster, because I do think that there are so many needs that they can address in this class. It's really a perfectly catered class for their needs. And because of that, I'd really value that. What is it? The 78th overall pick, the 100th overall pick. Even 139, if you look at the 7-round mock, I've got Leonard Taylor there. That's a guy I was putting in the end of first rounds, high second rounds, you know, back in the summer. So there's going to be some really good talent that's going to fall. And I would hate if I'm Washington. You don't want to miss out on the elite talents. You always got to chase those elite talents. But I do think that you're going to find very similar talent at 36, 40, and then even at 78, 67 and 78, like those two picks, you should find some guys that can not only play right away, that might start right away.
Excellent stuff. NFL draft analyst Ian Valentino of the 33rd team. Ian, thank you and all the best.
Great. Thank you so much, Al.
Yeah, the 2024 draft, such an important draft for the Commanders. Maybe the single most important draft in franchise history. I know that sounds like hyperbole, but you absolutely can make that argument. And you absolutely should be following at WSH on the daily on Instagram. With everything happening with the Commanders, make sure that you're listening to this podcast. And if you're on Instagram, make sure that you are following at WSH on the daily. WSH on the daily just started in 2021, and it has nearly 27,000 followers. The page is growing at a rapid rate, and the page is what its title suggests, daily. The page is updated every day. News, notes, reports, photos, graphics. WSH on the Daily is a page that properly sources and vets its news and information, doesn't just post anything that anyone says. WSH on the Daily responds to every single DM. WSH on the Daily is a page at which you can have fun. And WSH on the Daily always has a great fresh look. If you are on Instagram, check out at WSH on the daily and check out at WSH on the daily's online shop, WSHonthedaily.com. Some outstanding gear, shirts, hoodies, excellent material, modern looks. So for smart, informative, fun, and engaging Commanders content, check out at WSH on the daily on Instagram. And for great merch, visit WSHonthedaily.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, the forecast for the Washington, D.C. area for Monday called for a lot of rain. And so the Nationals scheduled 4:05 p.m. 2024 regular season home opener for Monday appeared to be in jeopardy. However, the rain stopped. And while cloudy and cool, the weather was certainly acceptable for playing. And so we on Monday did have the Nats 2024 regular season home opener. It, in fact, went uninterrupted by rain, but the result of the game was a loss, an 8-4 loss to the Pittsburgh Pirates at Nationals Park in game one of a three-game series. The Nats are 1-3 over their first four games in a regular season for a sixth consecutive season. If you can believe that, the Pirates are 5-0 in a regular season for the first time since 1983. Yet another bad game in terms of pitching for the Nats. They, over four games in this regular season, have yet to get a truly good outing from a starting pitcher. Mackenzie Gore was the Nats starting pitcher on Monday. This is a big season for Gore. He is viewed as a potential ace. He has a lot of talent. Gore on Monday officially allowed 3 runs in 5 2/3 innings. He gave up 5 hits, which were comprised of 2 doubles and 3 singles. He issued 2 hit by pitches. He did have 6 strikeouts versus 2 walks. You like that. But he, over his 5 1/3 innings, threw a whopping 101 pitches, 62 strikes versus 39 balls. Gore really labored over the first 2 innings. He threw a total of 47 pitches over a scoreless first inning and then a second inning in which he allowed 2 runs. Now, Gore, to his credit, after allowing the 2 runs, retired 8 consecutive batters, but he had a scoreless top of the 5th, issued a one-out walk and a 2-out hit by pitch, and he had a Pirates 1-run 6, was charged with a run of giving up a leadoff double by Henry Davis to the left field corner. Gore did then end his outing with a swinging strikeout of O'Neill Cruz. So the outing was not all bad, but you really can't call this a good outing for Mackenzie Gore. And then came the Nats bullpen, which has yet to not allow a run in a game in this regular season, and the bullpen on Monday was especially bad. Now, both of the Nats' top two relievers, Kyle Finnegan and Hunter Harvey, were essentially unavailable due to having pitched on each of the previous 2 days, although Harvey struggled on Saturday and Finnegan struggled on Sunday afternoon. Also, reliever Jordan Weems was out due to being sick. And so when it came to those Nats relievers who were used on Monday, four Nats relievers officially combined to allow 5 runs in 3 2/3 innings on a staggering 10 hits, 4 walks, and 2 wild pitches. yeah, not good. Derek Law officially tossed 1 1/3 scoreless innings. He, in the top of the 6th, did allow an inherited runner to score, but the run scored off 2 cheap infield singles that were given up by Law. So Law really wasn't that bad. Robert Garcia officially allowed a run in 2/3 of an inning, but the first out that he got was a big out. He came into the game top of the 7th, runners on 1st and 2nd, 2 outs, and the Nats trailing 3-1, and Garcia generated a swinging strikeout of O'Neill Cruz. So Law and Garcia really weren't too bad. But then came Matt Barnes and Tanner Rainey. Matt Barnes officially allowed 2 runs in 2/3 of an inning. He was a mess in what ended up being a 3-run 8th for the Pirates. Barnes came into the game in the top of the 8th with a runner on 2nd, went out in the game tied at 3. He, to the first batter he faced, gave up a tie-breaking one-out RBI double by Connor Joe to left field for a 4-3 Pirates lead. Barnes gave up a 2-out RBI hustle double by Key Brian Hayes on this, like, seeing-eye grounder up the middle for a 5-3 Pirates lead. Hayes charged toward a second base that momentarily wasn't being covered by any Nats player. Barnes then gave up a 2-out RBI single by Andrew McCutchen to left field for a 6-3 Pirates lead. And Barnes wasn't done. He then issued a 2-out wild pitch, and Barnes then issued a 2-out 5-pitch walk of Jack Suwinski. And Tanner Rainey, he in the top of the 9th allowed 2 runs on a double, 2 singles, 2 walks, and a wild pitch. He, in the inning, threw 40 pitches. Tanner Rainey, who last regular season pitched in just 1 major league game off having undergone Tommy John surgery in August 2022, has not looked good in either of his 2 outings so far in this regular season. The Nats' offense in this 8-4 loss to the Pirates on Monday was not the Nats' biggest problem, but the offense wasn't too good. 4 runs, just 8 hits, 2-for-10 with runners in scoring position. The Nats did draw 4 walks, and there certainly were some offensive bright spots for the Nats. More production from 2 guys who were productive in the Nats' regular season opening series at the Cincinnati Reds, C.J. Abrams and Trey Lipscomb. Abrams, as the Nats' starting shortstop and number 1 batter, went 2-for-5 with an RBI single and another single. Lipscomb, as it had starting third baseman and number 6 batter, went 2-for-4 with 2 singles. A big home run by Riley Adams. He on Monday was the Nats starting catcher and number 8 batter. He went 1-for-4 with a 2-run homer. Adams in a 2-run 7th had a game tying 1-out 2-run homer on a bomb to left field to tie the game at 3. The homer went a projected 427 feet per Statcast. Great to see that from Riley Adams, who is coming off a broken left hamate bone that he suffered in a 3-2 walk-off win over the New York Mets at Nationals Park last September 6th. Lane Thomas on Monday had a nice game. He is an at starting right fielder and number 2 batter, went 1-for-4 with an RBI single and a walk. Thomas, in an at's 1-run 3rd, had a 2-out opposite field RBI single and a walk. Thomas, in the Nats 1-run 3rd, had a 2-out opposite field RBI single to right field to cut the Nats deficit to 2-1. And Thomas, in the bottom of the 6th, drew a walk to conclude a 13-pitch plate appearance in which he fouled off 8 pitches. And speaking of walks, a man not exactly known for walks, Victor Robles. He on Monday started for the first time in this regular season. He was the Nats starting center fielder and number 9 batter, and he went 0-for-2, but with 2 walks, and he went 2-for-2 on stolen bases. Robles in the Nats 1-run 3rd drew a 1-out walk and had a steal of second base, and Robles in the bottom of the 7th drew a 1-out 9-pitch walk despite having been down in the count at 1.02, and he had a steal of second base. Given that so many of the Nats' top prospects are outfielders, including the team's top 2 prospects in Dylan Cruz and James Wood, This season would seem to be the final season for Victor Robles to truly reestablish himself as a starting outfielder for the Nats. I mean, his peak season of 2019 was a long time ago now, half a decade ago now. And keep in mind what happened with Robles this past offseason. The Nats, this past November 2nd, announced that they had declined their 2024 club option on Robles. Now, he still remained under team control and was eligible for salary arbitration. The Nats on November 14th announced having agreed on a one-year contract with Robles for the 2024 season, avoiding arbitration. But that 2024 club option was for $3.3 million. That was it. The Nats only wanted to pay him so much for this season. That tells you a lot about how he's now viewed. That said, good for Robles for drawing two walks on Monday. One more item on this Nats regular season home opener on Monday. The game was a sellout. The official attendance for the game, 40,405. The Nats for the 2023 regular season ranked 23rd out of 30 major league teams in average attendance for home games, 23,034. That's certainly not anything special, okay? But, you know, when you're in the midst of a rebuild, that's really not that bad. The Nats for the 2023 regular season totaled 1.866 million in home attendance. I would like to think that the Nats getting back to at least 2 million in home attendance is doable for this regular season. We'll see. Obviously, how the team performs will be a factor. Also, if slash when the Nats' top prospects get called up to the majors and how those guys perform will be a factor. Talking about outfielders Dylan Cruz and James Wood and third baseman Brady House. Here was Nats manager Davey Martinez during his postgame press conference on Monday evening on the sellout crowd.
Loved it. Loved it. I always say they're the 27th man, and I appreciate them so much, you know, and all their support. You know, it even starts with spring training. You know, we get a lot of good following spring training. We come down and see all those fans out there. It's awesome. So thank you. You know, thanks for showing up, and, you know, we're gonna be better. I know we're going to be better. You know, we're not playing horrible. You know, little things here and there. You know, we'll get those guys back on Wednesday. We'll want to know Wednesday.
Yes, 1-0 on Wednesday. No game for the Nats on Tuesday due to the usual off day after a regular season home opener. And so game two for the Nats against the Pirates at Nationals Park is scheduled for Wednesday evening at 6:45. And I say scheduled because there is rain in the forecast for Wednesday. But Trevor Williams is set to be the Nats' starting pitcher for Wednesday evening. Well, whereas the rebuilding Nationals for their home game on Monday had a sellout crowd of 40,405, the Win Now Orioles for their home game on Monday evening had a home crowd of just 12,666. Now, yes, the Nats game was the team's regular season home opener, and yes, the Orioles game was against the Kansas City Royals. Not exactly a big-time draw in MLB, but still, a mere 12,666 as the official attendance at Oriole Park at Camden Yards on Monday evening. Not a good sign for the O's having a good season of home attendance. It has been many years since the O's had a truly good season of home attendance. But those who were at Oriole Park at Camden Yards on Monday evening were treated to a walk-off win by the O's. A 6-4 walk-off win over the Royals in game one of a three-game series as the O's, Joe Angel, were in the win column.
And the Orioles again in the win column.
Yes, they are, Joe. Thank you. The O's for this regular season now are 3-1. Jordan Westberg, he on Monday evening as the Orioles starting second baseman and number 8 batter, went 1-for-4, but the one was a walk-off, one out, 2-run, opposite field home run to right field for the 6-4 win, and he did this on an 0-2 pitch. Jordan Westberg, the O's took him with the number 30 overall pick in the 2020 MLB draft out of Mississippi State. This season is his age 25 season. He, in the 2023 regular season, over 228 major league plate appearances, had an OPS plus of 100, which is league average, so not bad. But he did not hit for much power. His slugging percentage was just 404. Well, he on Monday evening did hit for power. Here was O's manager Brandon Hyde during his postgame press conference on Monday night on Jordan Westberg, and then you'll hear a follow-up exchange with O's insider Rich Dubroff of BaltimoreBaseball.com.
Got the ability to hit the ball out the other way, as you saw tonight, and I think he's just been around a lot of balls so far this year, but when he's going to right center, driving the ball the other way, he can do things like he just did, and he's got a lot of power that way. So great time to have an awesome swing. Great to see Sed get us going there on that inning as well, but really happy for Westy.
Last year, Westberg didn't show off a lot of power. Had a lot of power in the minor leagues. What are you seeing there this year from him?
Well, I mean, he's just adjusting to major league pitching, and you see it in batting practice, and you've shown it in the minor leagues that he can drive the ball out of the ballpark and to all fields. So, he doesn't need it to be just one sided and pull side. He can use the whole field. Hopefully, as he continues to get comfortable, you'll start seeing that more often.
Yeah, hopefully. The O's on Monday evening scored 6 runs, totaled 9 hits, worked 1 walk, and went 2-for-6 with runners in scoring position. So the offense was not great, but the O's had some big hits. We talked about the Jordan Westberg walk-off homer. Ryan Mountcastle, he is the Orioles starting first baseman and number 4 batter, went 2-for-4 with a 2-run homer and an RBI single. Mountcastle ended Orioles a 3-run fourth, had a game-tying 2-run homer over the Great Wall of Baltimore in left field to tie the game at 3. The homer went a projected 408 feet per Statcast. And Mountcastle ended Orioles 1-run eighth, had a 2-out full count RBI single to Royal shortstop Bobby Witt Jr. deep in the hole in shallow left field for a 4-3 Orioles lead. Mountie showing off the wheels on that single. Now, the O's on Monday evening did blow a 4-3 ninth inning lead. Craig Kimbrell, in his Orioles regular season debut, blew the save chance. The Orioles' new closer did not come through in his first regular season save chance with the O's. Now, in fairness to Kimbrell, it's not like he got hammered. He, in the top of the ninth, allowed a run on a bloop single, 2 stolen bases, and an RBI sac fly to tie the game at 4. So some bad luck for Craig Kimbrell, but he did blow the save opportunity. The Orioles bullpen on Monday evening prior to Kimbrell was good. Keegan Aiken tossed 1 1/3 scoreless innings, and Yadier Cano tossed 1 1/3 scoreless innings, though Cano did have to pull off an escape act. He tossed a scoreless top of the eighth to preserve a 3-all tie despite loading the bases with just 1 out. But keep in mind, the Orioles ace reliever from last season, Felix Bautista, is out. He underwent Tommy John surgery last October. So the likes of Craig Kimbrell and Yadier Cano need to come through for the O's. The Orioles starting pitcher on Monday evening was Dean Kramer. He was so-so. 3 runs in 5 1/3 innings. He gave up just 3 hits, though all 3 of them were extra base hits, 2 homers and a double. He did have 5 strikeouts versus 1 walk. He threw 85 pitches, 55 strikes versus 30 balls. Game 2 for the O's against the Royals at Oriole Park at Camden Yards is on Tuesday evening at 6:35. Cole Irvin will be the Orioles starting pitcher. And that will do it for you and me for now. Keep the feedback coming. You could hit me up on X at Al Galdi. You can email me the Al Galdi podcast at yahoo.com. Wednesday show episode 797. We'll include a lot for you on the Commanders. Also on Wednesday show, I'll talk Capitals, Orioles, and Wizards. The Caps are at the Buffalo Sabres Tuesday night at 7. The O's on Tuesday evening at 6:35 of Game 2 of a 3-game series against the Kansas City Royals at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. And the Wizards are home to the second-best team in the Eastern Conference, the Milwaukee Bucks, Tuesday night at 7. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, and I'll talk to you on Wednesday.
I mean, we have two quarterbacks on the roster right now, with Jake and with Marcus. So you want to go to camp with 4. So we're going to add 2 one way or the other. So however that happens, then that's what we're going to do.